Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on where you're joining us from. And welcome to today's webinar, Lessons from the Trenches, the Past, Present, and Future of Food Safety. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team at Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety, Inc., and I'll be facilitating today's webinar and offering technical support to our speakers. Today, we're very excited to be welcoming an industry expert and as a guest speaker for the presentation. She'll be introduced to you all a little bit later on in the show. All right, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first speaker today, and that is Paul DeMarin. He is the Senior Vice President of Food Safety and Supply Chain here at PJRFSI. Paul joined us last year in January and has over 35 years of experience in the hospitality, service, and retail agri-food sectors. Paul is a board member of the OFPA, that's the Ontario Food Protection Association. He's also an advisory council member with the George Washington University School of Business for their digital marketing certificate program. Before he came to PJRFSI, Paul worked for 16 years in the certification industry with clients in sectors from food safety and supply chain to brand protection and quality. Paul's also worked for many years in management systems certification. And prior to that, he was a professional chef and a consultant for over 20 years. So Paul, I'm gonna hand things over to you and you can take it away.
Great, thank you, Amy. I appreciate that. Thank you very much, everyone, for jumping on our call here today. As most of you now probably know, we have changed up our format for our webinars. All of last year, Amy and I hosted over 50 webinars, and we certainly want to thank all of our speakers who supported that. It was absolutely appreciated, and we really thank them. In 2020, our goal was really to deliver top content through industry professionals and become looked at as a thought leader in the industry. And during that time, I was also giving a full overview of who we as a company were and some of our services. So I think that now that we've achieved this, we've made a pivot and we're just jumping right into our the subject content for the presentation. And we hope that you're going to appreciate this new format. So in 2020 and 21 and certainly beyond, food safety trends continued to include improved processes for monitoring, label guidelines, supply chain traceability, and that helped to satisfy the demands from an involved consumer base. There's been a large number of high profile and large scale food recalls that have dominated the headlines in 2020 and even 2021. And today I have the pleasure of welcoming an expert and friend, Mrs. Denise Webster, who is the Food Safety Regulatory and Quality Consultant with Food Brand Pro. And today we're going to be discussing lessons learned and future food safety. So I have known Denise for many, many years. Excuse me. She's been in the industry for over 25 years herself, working diligently with various retailers, manufacturers, and major CPG brands. Denise is also an approved trainer and consultant for BRC, SQF, FSMA, and FSVP. Her passion is to improve the food and beverage industry through using a combined approach of risk-based management techniques and technical knowledge, and that helps to ensure brand protection while achieving market success. Today, Denise is going to be speaking about the lessons that she's learned in the future of food safety while I try to interact with Denise throughout the session as well. So without further ado, Denise, I'm going to pass it over to you and thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Just you guys could just click to the next page and then I'll take over. So I'm really excited to be here on this topic because ultimately food safety is a priority and we know change is inevitable. So why do we all decide to take time out of our busy days, whether it's to develop this webinar, to pull ourselves away from what we need to get done in the facilities or in our corporations? Well, in my opinion, we're all here really to have an opportunity to collaborate and learn from each other and really create an ability to perhaps listen to someone else's past and current understanding, but also to really, as an industry, understand more ideas, in the marketplace, what's going on, to really open up that discussion. And it's been great to see that Perry Johnson Registrar has really created this series of shared opportunities, and we hope for that continual discussion. So today I'm going to share ideas for improvement based on my own experience past, as well as plans for action. I really like to not just talk about what's wrong or what we could do right, but really have actionable steps that you could potentially take away from this webinar and really help prepare us for that future change, no matter where you're at in that spectrum in the poll that we just asked. As well as, it really is about not just creating a food safety culture mindset in our own facilities and businesses, but creating a collective food safety culture in the industry. And the way to do this is through these webinars and other areas, which I hope to share with you today. So to get going here.
Well, that's good. Yeah, Denise, you know, I'm sorry, I just mean to interrupt you here, but you know, I love your slide here about basically what food safety culture is, and that's always a hot topic in today's industry. Do you have any tips or thoughts on, you know, how to best measure food safety culture and how perhaps the FDA will inspect and enforce it?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, Paul. And we will talk about a couple of these elements, but food safety culture obviously is the buzzword of at least 2021, other than even it started really starting to form in our mindsets last year when GFSI decided that it was going to incorporate it as a benchmark requirement. So we'll talk about in today's session the FDA's new era of smarter food safety, which includes that food safety culture component, as well as how we can lead and empower really ourselves and our team through this. So great question, and hopefully we can kind of dive into that. So why does it matter? Well, you know, we definitely need to meet those regulatory requirements and the compliance elements, and that food safety is our priority, whether, you know, we're in the trenches in the facility or behind the computer writing SOPs and food safety plans. Ultimately, to meet those product specs, deliver on those business KPIs, those including those food safety and food safety culture KPIs, with that continuous improvement always in mind to ensure that we're creating consumer loyalty, that brand trust, and ultimately resulting in protecting our brands or our customers' brands that we may be co-packing in their, in our facilities, and ultimate growth. That is really why it matters, but what do we do to get here, and how do we really start transitioning into the why, and as I noted earlier, put actionable steps into place. So the first lesson I'd like to share with everyone is data. I think I learned this early on in my career as a food technologist and a QA manager, that I was able to put actionable items in the data that I was able to collect and analyze. It, as we know, it is a great source of our ability to understand if we're conforming or not conforming. It can be obtained through external information, such as the CDC outbreaks, the FDA's trending recalls, and the issues that are occurring out in the industry. But also so we can prioritize and focus our efforts to then also be able to look internally. Looking at our quality holds, our customer complaints, and trending are something that we don't take for granted, and we really do look at the data. But the future of data is bigger than this. We're going to see more artificial intelligence with systems being able to generate data, to be able to get sophisticated by comparing our different data measurements, such as looking at our customer complaints against our quality holds, against our GMP inspection, really be able to take the data and dissect it in different ways and use technology to hopefully be able to not just identify the issue that's in front of our face, but that requires a deeper root cause analysis and extraction of the information and, you know, really that data can be a starting point for a lot of other items that are not only going to help improve our processes and procedures, but also hopefully ensure food safety and brand protection.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, actually. You know, undeclared allergens, going back 5 years, I cannot think of a number one reason more than undeclared allergens. It continues year over year to be the number one reason for recalls. Denise, in your opinion, have compliance dates shifted at all due to the pandemic? And do you think the FDA is going to start on-site inspections again?
Well, I have heard through my colleagues and those that have discussions directly with the FDA that the FSMA regulations around, let's say, FSVP, those are going actively because they're mostly virtual desktop reviews anyways. With FSMA, they are getting back out there. There is some information that says, you know, of course, with still restrictions in place, but they are going to start getting back out there due to the gap that's been experienced. And we do need to continue to ensure compliance in that area. But, you know, really nothing has shifted dramatically from a compliance base. So I think it's really about keeping our pulse on where this is going for sure. But with your point on undeclared allergens, it is unfortunate that it continues to be a number one issue. And this is where the data can help us more, where we need to dig in deeper. Well, why are we having these issues? Is it labeling? Is it lack of controls? Maybe we need to put multiple hurdles in place and we're only hoping that one CCP or allergen preventive control is sufficient, when really we need a greater breadth of programs that we're triple checking so we can get this down. Because even one of our favorite retailers, had a warning letter by the FDA for having too many allergen recalls. And that, you know, if that tells you the focus of the FDA and that they're not going to just accept that a company just continually has recalls. So it's definitely a different approach and has awakened a lot of us up to say, oh, okay, FDA, we hear you.
Yeah, true. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. So lesson two is kind of off the back end of what we just said, you know, so let's not be complacent. Our FSMA regulations are going to continue to be enforced. So if it's been a few years since you dusted off your preventive control food safety plan, and you know, I know you're probably doing your annual reassessment, but really truly taking a look at it, maybe even having a colleague or peers in the industry share your different approaches. Back to that collaborative food safety culture, we need to stop thinking in silos and work more together, not, you know, be accepting of just whatever we created. Really challenge it. Additionally, foreign supplier verification, if this touches your business, it's definitely a high priority of requirements for the FDA to make sure that these activities are being done before food is imported into the U.S. As well as another one that I don't know that all businesses really truly have grasped yet, which is the intentional adulteration rule and making sure we have those programs in place that have mitigation plans and identifying those threats that could be occurring, even with those internal threats that exist within your own workforce, and not just ensuring that our doors are locked, but the employees themselves are not potential inside attackers. So intentional adulteration rule is one that we definitely have to put some more effort, I think almost in all capacities in the industry right now, and not to just accept what we might have called a food defense plan in prior. Also on the labeling side, we are now coming up against those dates where we have the nutritional labeling requirements for 2021 of next year, as well as we have the bioengineered disclosures mandatory. So those are coming. So the next lesson three, is really around using what's already out there for us to use. So I don't know if you guys are aware, but Last year, FDA did launch what's called the FDA Data Dashboard. It's been established as a performance management reporting tool. It really is off the back end of the FDA FSMA regulations, specifically the foreign supplier verification activities. You have to pull all this information together on your foreign suppliers. And prior to this dashboard, the FDA had it in all different areas. And it was, you had to download big Excel spreadsheets, chase it. This has been a thing of beauty. This data dashboard, it's not perfect, but they keep continuing to add suppliers, add the elements. What it specifically will help you do is understand not just for foreign suppliers, but also domestic suppliers. So anybody that sells food in the US that has ever had an FDA inspection, so not all suppliers are on this database yet, it'll show you the latest FDA inspection, their non-conformances and what type, so the severity, recalls, warning letters, and those import alerts. It's been a great tool that you can even use now for your own supplier approval process. And be able to even go in and check out your own facility, see if your facility's on there, and be able to really aim to monitor progress of your suppliers using this great tool that the FDA has put together.
You know, I've seen that dashboard myself, and you're right, it is a thing of beauty. Being able to take all the analytics across the entire inspection database is absolutely amazing and brilliant. It gives us a lot of great insight. Denise, what is the timing of the new era of smarter food safety rollout? And is there anything else that, people can do to be better prepared for this?
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk a little bit more about that, but they're really giving themselves about 10 years to roll out the new era of smarter food safety. And I'll share with you guys later the four core elements. We won't be able to get into all the details, maybe that's for our next session, but it's definitely coming, and this is just one tool that they have kind of put into place to further promote the FSMA as well as to support the foundation of that new era of smarter food safety. Another tool, so in that same kind of lesson, there we go, lesson three, the core outbreak investigation table. So what this tool does, and I don't know, this is fairly new, this is even newer than the FDA data dashboard, it's the coordinated outbreak response and evaluation tool. It's really to share, the FDA's way to share information on foodborne illness outbreak investigation as soon as it begins. Really to have an earlier warning detection system for consumers and industry. You can see in this table that it has the date it's posted. It'll have a unique reference number, the pathogen of concern, if the illness, which product is linked to the illness, what is the number of total cases, as well as updated weekly, those counts. And if there's any kind of advisory or recall initiated off the back end of this outbreak. So if you haven't already, you want to sign up for the updates. If you're already signed up for the FDA recall alerts and all of those other great tools, this would be another one, and they will update it on the weekly, and you will see what the current state of affairs is out there with CDC investigations, and they will also be putting the respective information still on the CDC food tool database, but this one kind of collates it into the main investigation table. Okay. Lesson four is obviously, we're talking about this now, but it's about being aware of changes. So definitely subscribe to those updates. I know it's a lot in your email box. So what I do, I use, is I have a separate email account in my email account that it goes to. So then that way I know to kind of check it once or twice a day, and I won't, one, lose it in the massive emails that we all have coming to us, but also so, it reminds me there are updates that are happening on the weekly. And you can see here just in the US FDA's, they over in March, they had three CIFSAN updates, which were pretty important. And I wasn't even aware of this until recently, that this was even coming until I saw it, which is the FDA is now requiring a unique facility identifier for the facility re-registration. That's essentially falls back on FSVP rules, and it's the DUNS number. So that is new. So keep an eye on these updates and changes, and you'll be able to then communicate to your business anything that might be an impact of significance. Some other things that are kind of coming down the pike that you may or may not know is the FDA's renewed focus on reducing toxic elements in foods for babies and young children. We really do a poor job as an industry looking at chemical hazards. Beyond allergens, chemical hazards have not, you know, had as much effort as, say, biological hazards. And the first start will be the focus on babies and young children, the at-risk category. But I see this continuing to then grow into, you know, normal everyday food for us adults as well. We also have the sesame voluntary labeling guidance, where if you're selling tahini, they're encouraging the industry right now to put in parentheses behind that word tahini, sesame, being clear that sesame is in the product. They're not mandating this to be in the contained statement, but it's something that all industry that may have sesame are having to take a look at, and we have to keep a pulse on this as well, because it might shift and they might end up making this a mandatory change. Okay.
All right, thanks, Denise. We do have another quick polling question that I'm just going to throw out there now. And that has to do with regulations. Which regulations do you think will have the most impact on your business? As before, choose whatever of the options best applies to you and your situation. To those of you who might have joined us a little bit late, welcome to the webinar, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us. If you have any questions as Denise is presenting and Paul and they're discussing the topic, please feel free to type them right into the questions tab of the control panel on your screen. We will be doing a live Q&A at the end, and we hope to answer as many questions as we can. All right, we're getting some great participation in this poll. If I can just see a couple more votes, we'll let you guys get those opinions in, and then Denise can continue on with her presentation. All right, fantastic. Thank you to everyone who participated. And here's how the voting rolled out. It looks like the majority is FSMA implementation and inspections. All right, and back over to you, Denise, take it away.
All right, excellent. If you just want to go to five, do I have? It's not going to the next slide. There we go. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, thanks. All right, so as we mentioned, you know, this is on top of everybody's mind because we really don't know how the FDA is going to start to roll out the new era of smarter food safety really approaches. There's going to be four core elements. One, that's tech-enabled technology. They do want us to focus more on those modern methods of the access that we have the ability to with smarter tools, and core two around the outbreak response, which you see now the core table database that we just talked about. That's kind of an element that fits into this new era of smarter food safety. They're also going to spend some time on new business models and retail modernization. For those that are my retail clients out there and in the industry, we're really going to keep a pulse on what this is going to look like. And lastly, around the food safety culture, they are going to first start doing a training program around this to train their inspectors and really start developing tools and ability to measure. We don't know what this looks like. They're still forming this. And as I mentioned, they have noted that this is really about keeping pace with the evolution of food safety systems and just the food system in general with modern technology that we're launching at a fast pace. And they're really giving themselves over kind of a 10-year span to really build out what essentially is phase two of FSMA. And also don't forget to subscribe to updates for here. There's also a video and that 16-page document here that you see a little snapshot that you can read. We could spend a whole hour or more just on this topic alone. But with that, I at least wanted to dive into one area. There we go. Tech-enabled technology. So that was that core one. In this, they have launched already the foundation of the food traceability list. What this is really around identifying those products that are high risk due to the frequency of outbreaks, likelihood of contamination, its potential for pathogen growth. They're also going to consider some economic impacts, like food fraud, for example. And the types of foods that are in this food traceability list, where they are going to try to mandate traceability for these critical tracking events around things like soft cheeses, nut butters, ready-to-eat deli salads. These are products that are of no surprise probably to any of us in the industry that will be focused on first, also including fin fish and crustaceans. So we want to keep an eye on how this will roll out and what does it truly mean to be tech-enabled when it comes to traceability. And they really want some low cost tools in this area to be able to not require, let's say, mandatory ERP or recipe management systems, but be able to work with industry to develop the future, but not at a significant cost to the business. So more to come on this for the future. Okay. And our food safety culture, really, we know that this is really at the forefront of everybody's mind right now, especially due to the fact that GFSI has benchmarked this as a requirement for our BRC and our GFSI based standards, SQF. Really, when we look at the definition, it is pretty simple, but it's difficult to put into action. So that definition of shared values, beliefs, and norms that occur within whatever organizational structure we have, whether it be a corporate with six facilities, within that facility, you've got different cultures that are occurring in maybe the maintenance department, to the production, to the QA. So how do you really understand and establish benchmarks and KPIs around this topic? It's definitely something that is an area where we are really working hard to not only develop and understand, but to implement effective change management programs with the lens of food safety culture. And as I mentioned at the start, it is really about leading and empowering your team to take action and really creating that positive reinforcement and check-in approach to ensure that we are on that journey. You can't change a culture overnight, but you need to be able to start that journey, understand, play around with things that can impact in a positive light. Okay, so lesson seven, increased enforcement. So as we talked about this increased enforcement around FSMA regulations, but it's also around more advisories. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there has been a lot more advisories of recently. It's kind of their FDA's power to be able to communicate what they feel is of concern. And these may happen before recalls. So that just recently, the Real Water situation was started off as an advisory, and now it's in a recall. We've got warning letters. There's going to be more of those. The power of the FDA's ability also is around letters to the industry. So I'm seeing those as well. More sampling and testing, that they promised that, yay. And FTC. So we have to remember that it's not just the FDA or the USDA, it's also the Federal Trade Commission when we're making certain claims around our products and even how we're making claims on social media sites, or we have a consumer that is making a claim and we like it or share it. Now you've just confirmed that that claim is true, according to the FTC. So we're having to broaden our past experience in this area and really look at these future changes that could impact our business in one way or the other. And then just back to those increased inspections. Lesson 8, innovation really driving regulations. So the FDA, although they are doing a much better job, I feel, in the 25 years that I've been in this industry, to getting ahead of regulations, or at least in line with regulations and innovation at the same time, versus before, they seem to always be playing catch up and then we would be negatively impacted later on. So if we just look at this from a past, current, and future, on just a few things that are in the top of our mind, where past we, you know, had canning and aseptic pasteurization, that really, you know, led to our low acid canned food regs and the start of HACCP implementation to the FDA. And then, you know, we picked up this great technology from Canada, the University of Guelph, and around the world, high pressure pasteurization. We started using it, and then the FDA came and said, oh, well, you guys haven't considered anaerobic, you know, conditions that could lead to Clostridium perfringens or botulinum. So then they made us acidify. So, you know, that was one of those situations where we're now kind of aligned with them on what validation is needed and what controls are in place. But what is the future? Well, we have some very interesting technology that we need to, you know, take a look at, and it'll be interesting to see how regulation pans out on it, such as these non-thermal technologies, one being pulse electric field technology. So not only is it important for regulation to keep an eye on these innovations, but also as our businesses evolve. A second category is standards of identity. It, obviously, in the past, they set these because of economic issues. There were, you know, adulteration, misbranding, dilution. So FDA thought, okay, let's create standard of identity for things like milk. But now with our own innovation, with plant-based milks and cheeses and things that you wouldn't even know weren't milk, have really challenged the standards of identity. And FDA has now recognized that this is an area where they need to put extra effort towards, and they're starting to get behind that, as well as our future, which is the cell culture technologies in all different capacities. And ultimately, the FDA has decided they're going to work in partnership side by side with the industry that's creating this technology. And so that is reassuring that they are starting to learn. They're getting ahead of this. And a few others are bioengineered foods and non-GMO labels inserts, kind of coming right after the back end of the development of bioengineered foods to now the current state of affairs, which is we need to label if it does contain it. And now the future, we have even a greater opportunity around DNA-free genome-edited plants. What is this going to look like? So ultimately, with all these innovations driving regulation, it is about harmonization, whether it be with preventive controls or our technology to produce product. There we go. Okay, lesson 9 is to be risk aware. Our capability of our organization, not only to understand risk, but for it to really, before it becomes a threat, and communicate issues and recognize that we need to put mitigation steps in place, make our team aware, whether it's the management staff on a regulation that's coming out, or there are increase in pathogen issues in a particular commodity, a product that we might be producing. We need to be more risk aware collectively to be able to create that stronger foundation for growth and leadership. And through webinars like this, we're really starting to check that box and cultivate a more risk aware culture to effectively reduce and manage potential change. Okay. So lesson 10, never stop learning. I wanted to end on this, just like we started on this topic, which is really around, where do we go first to get the information? Well, we do have our industry support, trade associations, conferences, those blogs, podcasts, webinars like this, newsletters, and the websites like FSPCA has a great resource page, templates. When we never stop learning and we know where to go, it helps us really get our jobs done faster, better, and hopefully more accurate to be able to mitigate those risks that we talked about or to be prepared for regulation. We also need to be able to challenge our own perspective of things. I have a different perspective on something that a peer might have, and to be able to share those, discuss them, debate them, and when in doubt, ask someone else and just always continuous learn. Perhaps you're an expert at the SQF code. Well, learn the BRC code. Learn other codes so you can see how they might apply those same GFSI-based requirements.
And Denise, I love the topic risk. I talk about this a lot with many of our other guests that we have. And, you know, there's terminology that talks about organizational blind spots when it comes to risk. And, you know, I'm just wondering, in your experience, how effective, are the companies that you have worked with or that you've seen manage risk or manage its top risks? Have you seen any trends in that area, or just in general, how effective you think companies are today with managing their top risk?
Well, I think we have more access to information than we ever had before, and it's continuing to grow. The problem is, and I don't know about you, but from my perspective, it can be almost overwhelming. Someone will say, oh, have you heard about so-and-so? And I'm like, oh gosh, I haven't, right? Because I'm too busy doing the activity. So We do kind of have to rely on those opportunities to stop, listen, read those things that we sometimes don't have the ability to do. Yeah. In order to be more risk aware and to be prepared, so we're not caught off guard, for sure. But you know, it is about us holding hands together, I think, and that's why, you know, I'm happy to continue to take time out of that to-do list to do things like this.
Yeah, no, that's great, and I appreciate that. And I have one final question just before I pass it back to Amy. But how often would you suggest that a company should look at refreshing their assessment of their risks, of their top risk? Is that a weekly, daily, monthly? What do you think?
Yeah, Paul, that's actually a really great question. I think when you start off with a plan, it's always your best step forward, and adjust that plan as it goes. So perhaps you have a plan to look at your food safety plan every year because you're required to. But maybe when you have a new product or process, right, you really then don't just stop at reassessing your food safety plan. You're looking at maybe your associated procedures or, you're scheduling in every month. I'm going to, look at this part in my internal audits, or I'm going to spend time digging deeper into that particular topic in the industry. So I would say there isn't a best frequency that's set. I would say establish a plan, try to follow it, give yourself some flexibility to adjust for it, but doing nothing or not doing, saying, oh, I'll get to it, or and you've got that stack of food safety journals piling up, or those emails or the internal audits that need to be done because you didn't have a plan scheduled out to do it, is more of an issue than the frequency of doing it.
That's great. Okay, thank you. Okay, well, Denise, thanks very much for your time. Amy, let's take some audience questions.
Sorry, it's not transitioning. So if you guys could just click through. Here you go.
Did we lose you there, Amy?
Can you hear me now?
There you are. Yes.
There I am. all right. Yeah, no, and I'm not sure if anyone could hear me. If you have any questions regarding Denise's presentation that you wanted to get in, go ahead and type those into the questions tab now and send them in. We'll be taking a look at those in just a second. I did also want to encourage everyone to take a look at the other webinars we have scheduled all through June. They are all free to register, and we really do hope to see everyone on another webinar. All right, I'm just going to go ahead and open up the questions tab. All right, it looks like one of our frequently asked questions did pop up again, and that's regarding the slides from the presentation. And the answer is yes, the slides from today's broadcast will be available from pjrfsi.com. And the recording also will be available if you wanted to, maybe you missed the first part of Denise's slides, or you had a question regarding the beginning and wanted to review. That will be on our YouTube channel, usually within 24 to 48 hours of the end. All right, let me see, Denise, what I've got for you here in terms of questions from the audience. All right, oh, this is very topical. What kind of long-term impacts do you think the COVID-19 pandemic might have on food safety?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, prior to COVID, I had, you know, experience with wearing masks, and it was usually our Asian clients from either Japan or Korea that encouraged us to implement masks. And really, oddly enough, I just really didn't think it was necessary. And then obviously with COVID, you know, I've had a change of heart, you know, on this a bit. And I think the masks ultimately are going to stick in at least in some aspects of our food manufacturing. You know, there are, you know, your side by side in those meat processing facilities, you know, on our bakery lines where we're packing off, you know, muffins and tins or cookies in the vertical conveyor belts, whatever that looks like. You know, it's probably time to take a look at our PPE and reassess it from that perspective, as well as the dreaded hand washing. Really, it was a difficult road to get people to recognize that hand washing was important and to spend that 20 seconds and to really clean your hands. And, you know, that's been a positive that's come out of this, where, you know, I don't have to push the effort as much. And I think my other colleagues out there who, you know, go into the factories or are there every day have seen an increase in usage of, you know, overall our PPE and hand washing. And so I would say from a long-term impact, I do see those two things, as well as just looking at how, you know, how close we are together in processing lines. If you can, you know, just protect employees, not from just the product's food safety or employee safety, but from each other as well.
Yeah, it's definitely a silver lining there. All right. Regarding the future of food safety, any thoughts on how you think businesses today could improve their food safety overall? I mean, what are some of the major missteps that you see?
Yeah, if I look at the past, I remember the HACCP plan being voluntarily implemented before FDA mandated it, and it was really the QA managers and directors program. And I've seen it evolve now with FSMA and, you know, and being the required most person in the building having to sign off on it. And I've seen improvements of developing a cross-functional food safety plan. But really, to get to the next step is about having that system, that HACCP-based system, help drive the foundation, but to develop more harmonized approaches. You know, this doesn't have to be that our plans all look the same, but we need to dig a little deeper in how often should we meet as a food safety team? Does the senior most person just sign off on the document, or should they really be going through a HACCP or preventive control class? How much information should we really be sharing with the line team that isn't responsible for a CCP? We still are not quite there when it comes to our food safety plans and really digging deeper beyond just now where we're at with preventive controls. So I do see effort needs to be put in that next phase of harmonization.
Absolutely, great. All right, I see two more questions in the queue here. If anyone had any others, please get those in so we can help you out with some live answers here. All right, the next question I've got. What do you consider the most important factors to monitor to ensure food safety?
Food safety culture.
Mm-hmm.
Really, and that's why it's all the buzzword, because we know what to monitor, right? We know where our, if we've done a good job in our hazard analysis, we know where our preventive controls are, our CCPs, our risk, those allergen labels. But what we don't know how quite to do is how to ensure effective implementation from an employee standpoint, and putting efforts in food safety culture with understanding where you're at in that spectrum. Is it weak on the journey? Is it strong? Is it maybe weak in certain departments? How do we really prioritize that improvement, as well as put together things like incentive-based programs? You see someone on the line doing the right thing, recognizing them, giving them that premium parking spot or that 20, just a random $25 gift card, If I think, I have two kids, and they clean, if they clean their room, I didn't tell them to clean their room. And if they do, bam, there you go. Here's $5 for just doing it without even asking. That's going to incentivize them. It's really starting to think outside of the box and putting food safety culture also in our mindset, not just thinking about the tactical things that we always have thought about.
Absolutely. All right. One last question I've got here, unless another one pops in. I've got what, in your opinion, is the biggest number one threat facing the industry today?
I think complacency, and that's why I had it as, I think, lesson two or the top few lessons, because sometimes it's tiring. We've get done with, perhaps launching a whole SQF system, redid the food safety plan. We sometimes just want to take a break, and we're happy with our work. We're like, that's good. We're good. And that complacency, I think, is what gets us in trouble. We have to constantly be on our toes in the food safety industry, whether it is, challenging ourselves internally, looking outside with what others are doing, asking our peers to review it. I remember early days in my career when I was writing SOPs, I really kind of sucked at it. And it really took other people learning and taking a red pen to that SOP and being able to see it from another person's perspective. And now I can whip out an SOP with perfection, but it wasn't for a lot of hard work and tears to get there. So don't be complacent.
Absolutely. Well, Denise, thank you so much for taking the time to present for us. Paul, thank you for taking the time to join us on the webinar as well. Any parting words of wisdom before we sign off, Denise?
Yeah, just keep joining your webinars and reach out, LinkedIn, ask a question. I think we're all willing to share in this industry, whether, and it's not for, lack of asking. So we just need to, keep challenging ourselves and reaching out. So glad everyone who did attend stayed and listened.
Yeah, thank you to everyone who attended. If there were any questions, or maybe you think of a question later, please do absolutely feel free to reach out to PGRFSI. We can definitely get you pointed in the right direction to find some answers for whatever questions you might have. So once again, just on behalf of the whole team over here at PGRFSI, Denise and Paul, thank you so much. And to everyone who attended, thank you. We hope to see you all on another webinar soon, and I hope you have a great weekend.